Shots fired.
Thank you for tuning in to The Pure Truth, a podcast that takes on a variety of topics from pop culture to everyday life. I'm Chantel C. You can call me CC, and I'm joined by my partner in organizing, Denise.
Hello.
What up, what up? What it do, what it do?
It does everything.
Happy Black American Music Appreciation Month.
Oh, no, no.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. That's what we needed. That's the bone we needed.
Yeah.
You can have that bone himself. That's really going to invigorate the youth, I think. Yes.
I thought
that's going to stop the prison pipeline in its tracks. Like, what?
That was an honor. I don't even know what you... What? Hey. So, on the topic of music.
Really?
Yep. Last weekend was Memorial Day in the U.S. So Everybody basically had the Monday off. So it was not only Memorial Day weekend, it was also Washington, D.C.'s Black Pride 2017.
Oh, yeah.
I know you be fiending.
Yes.
And, you know, it's a weekend event where the city celebrates the LGBTQ community with parties and events, concerts, and so forth. And Tank was invited to perform because Tank has a large following in the LGBTQ community, and he's probably also not so expensive. Let's be real.
Okay, see.
Look, I like Tank.
Don't get in people's pockets. You don't know.
I like Tank. I'm just saying he probably not as expensive as someone like Maxwell or...
Okay.
And, you know, D'Angelo, he be in hiding, so you gotta go for somebody.
For those of you that do not know Tank...
Let's move on.
It's a bit confusing because now there's Tank and the Bangas, right?
That's not and confusing. That's only confusing to you. Like,
to me?
Tank and the Bangas, they are only touring in the U.S. right now. They won the Tiny Desk concert. I don't think it's confusing. So,
Okay.
So Tank, the R&B singer Muscle Man, received a lot of hate on Twitter because he chose to perform. Like, some people were like, oh my gosh, why is he performing? I told y'all he was gay. Oh my gosh, why is he taking off his clothes at the LGBTQ party thing? What you think? What's going on? What happened?
I'm thinking this is what someone who is secure in their masculinity looks like, whether he's queer or not. Like, seriously, this is someone who is completely just unbothered by all of this fragile stuff.
Absolutely unbothered. He posted pictures on Instagram. The place was packed. Like, that has to be said. Mm-hmm. And there were, you know, all genders at the stage thirsting for Tank.
Mm.
I would have been thirsting, too. He has a very nice body. And I actually like his music. I don't know why people hate on him and say he can't sing. I mean, hey.
Well, this was an amazing marketing move for him, to be quite honest, right? Like, I mean, to find an R&B singer, a Black man who is completely unbothered by, you know, I mean, and I don't even know what his politics around sexuality or gender identity are. However, like, this was definitely a win for him on the PR front.
Well, Tank, I don't know his politics, his personal politics.
Exactly.
But Tank's music is often, it's like, for me, it's closer to the 90s style R&B that I love than, like, you know, a Bryson Tiller trap soul.
Is he giving El DeBarge?
No, not El DeBarge, but he's definitely giving you, like, I'm a romance you, I'm a do all the right things, I'm a, you know, and then he be in his feelings when it don't go the way he planned. So I think he was a good pick. And
okay,
also,
it's kind of like an I'll Be Sure situation. But okay.
You said I'll Be Sure. Oh, goodness. I'll Be Sure.
Yes.
But I also wanted to talk about another thing that you happened to mention about this Pride event. Mm. So you posted an article from the Black Youth Project that said, keep the white partner at home. Don't bring them to our Black Pride event. I just wanted to talk about that for a moment.
Okay.
Do you agree with that? Leave the white folks at home. Don't come to the Black Pride event.
Yes.
Why? Why is that important?
I think it's really hard for people sometimes with white partners, non-Black partners, to be respectful of Black-only spaces. Now, Black Pride isn't necessarily explicitly Black, but it has been understood to be a Black space.
Mm-hmm.
But because it is Pride, people often want to bring their same-sex queer partner, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a bit of a contradiction for people who are in interracial relationships sometimes, that they're like, well, what's the issue? You know, my partner is woke, right?
Not necessarily, but okay.
Right. But in their eyes, you know, generally most people feel like their partner is woke, or otherwise they wouldn't be dating them, right? Oh, gosh, let's hope. Let's hope. Let's pray. Let's pray, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so they're like, so what's the issue? And the article brings up the fact that white people, unlike the rest of us, can bring the state's power to bear at their whim.
Yeah.
And that puts us in a very dangerous position, especially when you have people that are already marginalized by the police.
Right.
So white people see the police as a completely acceptable conflict resolution force. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And they see them as fair. And so if something goes down at Pride, at Black Pride, and a white person is involved, we know they have the authority. It doesn't matter if 10 Black people say, actually, that's not what went down.
Mm-hmm.
The white person has the authority.
Because, and what about non-whites, non-Blacks at Black Pride?
Right. So non-Black POC.
Mm-hmm.
So the article goes on to say, this includes non-Black POC. We feel like Black Pride is not a POC event. Black Pride is Black Pride, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it is Black Pride. I think there's definitely been a push to turn a lot of Black things into POC things that I'm very resistant to, as you know. If it's Black, it's Black. I love the term POC, and I think that POC things should occur. But Black things are Black things, and POC, non-Black POC specifically, can be anti-Black and often are. So they come into spaces, and there's conflict around that.
Well, I'm just going to give an example because I imagine some people aren't following. Okay. So it wasn't Black Pride. I don't think, I'm sure white people do come to London's Black Pride. I never see them. I'm just in a sea of Blackness. But at Afropunk, which of course is not specifically Black.
Oh.
But for those of us who know the story of it, who are maybe Black and quirky, Black and nerdy, whatever it is, you know, we appreciate Afropunk on so many levels, right? And it is a space to celebrate the Black and quirky, right? Mm-hmm. The Black and rock and whatever else, the Black and punk. And we attended Afropunk Paris last year.
Mm-hmm.
I stood in the front row the entire day for every band.
Yes,
and
you did.
Yes, I did. And it wasn't until the end.
You are now in the promotional material.
And, it, you know, at some point, a white Irish woman was acting up behind me. She spilled beer on our friend.
Right.
Had no apologies for that. And so my friend said something and just continued to, like, ignore boundaries, behave badly, step on feet, dance around when there was nothing to dance to and so forth. Took up a lot of space.
Mm.
And when I called her on that, she asked me what my problem was, and I said, you need to respect the space that you're in. She didn't get that. So then she proceeds to, you know, step on someone else's foot who was with us. That person was a little shy about it. And I was like, see, this is what you continue to do. You continue to not see us.
Mm.
Are we not visible to you? We've been here for a while now. And then she complains to my friend about my behavior. Right. And this just continued. And she just continued to hit people, push people, spill things on people. And it was just like, how are we so invisible to you when you have come into this space that is for us?
Right, right, right. Yeah. And that often happens is like white people come into spaces for Black people and objectify Black people. This is happening right now. And there's a queer space for POC people that is happening every Thursday at the Rosalie LaVilla here in Vienna. And one complaint that I heard was that the space was going great. People were dropping in. It was wonderful. And then, like, some shady white dudes came in trolling for sex workers.
No.
Yes. Trolling for sex workers. And
okay, I can't.
At a queer POC space.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, like, it's not even like they came into the space on any pretense of, like, wokeness. Like, I'm just trying to find a partner because I'm really into, you know, flavor or whatever. Like, they, like, came in on some, like, so how much?
Mm.
So from go, like, coming to the door on some straight up, like, consumption shit. And that is often the case, you know? It's hard for people who are in interracial relationships to understand that because they don't see that their partner as participating in that objectification. They don't see it.
Mm.
And it's like, it really doesn't matter. Like, if a space isn't for me, like, can I just leave it be? Can I have enough respect to just be like, you know, this is a space for trans people. I'm not trans. Like, I respect that space. Like, I don't have to be a part of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
I wonder, does John Legend think that? Because John Legend has a non-Black partner, but John Legend is doing the most on the Black front. He is creating a series about Tulsa's Black Wall Street, right? Mm-hmm. And we just had the anniversary. It was one of the greatest massacres of Black people in the United States. And he's also the executive producer of a show that I ride for, Underground, which has been canceled this week. In public statement, it says, quote, despite Underground being a terrific and important series, it no longer fits with our new direction, and we have reached the difficult decision not to renew it for a third season, end quote. This was distributed by Peter Kern, president and CEO of WGN America's parent, Tribune Media Company.
Right.
Tribune has just been bought for $3.9 billion by Sinclair Broadcast Group, which is an openly center-right conservative conglomerate. And to be fair, Underground is the only scripted docu type, you know, drama series that still plays on WGN America. They've already gone in a different direction. Also, each episode costs about $5 million to make.
Lord have mercy.
Yes. So it's not, you know, there are some things happening. Apparently their second season, it debuted to only 1.8 million viewers, which was about 500,000 fewer than the first season's premiere, which broke network debut records, by the way. But it has a 96% approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes. I love the show. Like, I can't speak highly enough for it. It gets so much right. And John Legend, who's an executive producer and supporting actor in the show, has been doing a lot to get other people behind it so that they find a new home. Apparently, BET and OWN have both been approached and both rejected the show, citing high production costs. My bet is on Netflix or HBO.
I would prefer Netflix.
I would too.
I would too. You know, as an international person, I can't be bothered with no HBO stuff. But, oh, yeah, that makes me sad. I'm really sad about that.
I think it's interesting that they claim that they're going in a different direction, but they've just been bought by a super conservative pro-GOP media conglomerate.
Yeah, so, you know, look out for somebody doing a Gone with the Wind type rendition of slavery. You know, how good they used to treat them slaves, how Black people were better off as slaves, kind of.
No.
Yeah, you know it's going to happen.
No, like, I don't think they're not doing scripted. They say they don't want scripted drama at all. That they don't want that expensive type of writing. They want simpler stuff. They want, you know, like Fox News. That's what they want.
Okay. All right. Do you? But yeah, it's really hard because they're, as to my knowledge, outside of OWN, they're no Black owned networks, right? BET is no longer Black.
Hasn't been Black owned for like centuries, really.
It was sold to Viacom a while back. And so outside of OWN, that's it. And I actually feel like Oprah's doing a lot with OWN.
Mm-hmm.
I, you know, some of this stuff is so touchy. I can't even watch it. Like Queen Sugar. I'm like, it's brilliant. It's amazing. And it's too much for me. Like, I'm too invested already after 3 episodes. Can't watch anymore.
Okay. You're a mess.
You know I'm sensitive, right?
That's what you claim. Yes.
But yeah, I'm really sad for Underground. I want it to be on Netflix. I want to see all the back episodes. The Get Down was recently canceled as well.
We talked about that, yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting if these shows find another life somewhere.
I believe Underground has the ability to do so. $5 million per episode is not too large of a budget. It wasn't even too large of a budget for WGN America. They Tribune said so itself. However, The Killing, for example, was something that I loved. It was a remake of some of The Killing that was based in Denmark, and it got canceled, and Netflix picked it up for at least a third season. That's all they did there, was a third season. And I would even be content if Netflix picked Underground up for just one more season, so it doesn't end this way. Sad part about it that should be emphasized is Underground really tells a different story than what we're used to when talking about the Underground Railroad. There's a lot of history that can be found in Underground, stories that remain untold in course curriculums or, you know, in public secondary school systems. It's not completely fictionalized. They do have real characters on this show that people should know about. And that's why I'm sad to see it go. It seems that anytime we get something that is telling a different part of history that we don't normally get, it's telling something outside of mainstream history narratives, it's never prioritized or important enough to keep on. In our second segment, we already touched on it a little bit in the first segment. I want to talk about space. What does it mean to create a space specifically, particularly for Black people? Or for Black women.
It means that you are going to war.
It does.
And it's something that a lot of people don't understand even when creating the space. They think, okay, you know, let me just do this. But if you really want to create a space for marginalized people, it means you are going to war, whether it's figuratively or literally. As we know with Stonewall and the history of queer spaces, when queer people started to create spaces for themselves, the actual state came into those spaces and regulated the bodies of those people, actually put queer people in jail for absolutely no reason. So even creating queer spaces was a declaration of war or resistance against the state apparatus. Now, creating a space for Black people, for women, is also a declaration of war. And that brings us to Paris.
Paris, the newest example of what can go wrong if you don't use a brain and don't have a conversation. The Moissy Collectif Afrofeministe organized a Nyan Sapo Festival, which is slated for July 28th through the 30th. And in their own words, they aim to, quote, put the accent on how our resistance as an Afrofeminist movement is organized, end quote. The festival is organized into spaces, so 80% of the venue is reserved for Black women only. Another section is open to Black people of any gender, and a third section is open to all. They, for whatever reason, have come under attack on Sunday in a series of tweets. Okay, people, Twitter. The Paris mayor, Anne Hidalgo, condemned the Black Feminist Festival, and she said it was, quote, forbidden to white people, end quote.
Lovely.
She had not reached out to them before tweeting. She had relied completely on anti-racism groups who denounced the festival and the International League Against Racism and Anti-Semitism, who had the nerve to even say, quote, Rosa Parks would be turning in her grave.
Bro, they love to exhume dead Black people they killed. Right. So
Rosa lived a long life and was here for the struggle. She put in a lot of work and died an older woman. But nonetheless, keep Rosa Parks' name out your mouth. This has nothing to do with Rosa. You don't know how Rosa would react, though I have an idea. And I don't think she would be turning in her grave. So after putting this collective under a great deal of stress and pressure and threatening to sue the organizers, Monday morning, Hidalgo tweeted that she had reached, quote, a clear solution, end quote, with the organizers, claiming that she was a part of the solution, whereas actually it was just her misunderstanding. And she realized that the festival has been organized in a way that in the public spaces, everyone is welcome. The non-mixed workshops will be held in a private space. Mwasi Collective has handled this really well. And I just want to read quite quickly a statement that they issued on Facebook. Quote, "We discover, not without astonishment, that Mrs. Hidalgo, under the assumption that a firm intervention on her part would have made us change our program and its unfolding. There is nothing more wrong. The festival has always been organized in this form, verifiable very simply on the internet, the press release on the site of La General, the article of Liberacion, the tweets from our account. Mrs. Hidalgo challenges the reality by trying to find an exit from the top. A polemic that could have been avoided if her teams or herself had taken the trouble to inquire, looking at our site, for example. After days of defamation, insults, pressures suffered by the collective, La General, the people and organizations that support the festival, we are awaiting apologies from the mayor of Paris, apologies that hope will be all equally firm." End quote. Even the UK chapter of Black Lives Matter tweeted in support of the festival and against officials who hoped to shut it down. What is really going on? What is this? I'm very happy to see the collective use very clear wording, very strong wording on their position, and to not cower. The location that the festival is being held at also stood steadfast and supported Mwasi Collective. I'm very happy to see all of that. But what was going on with Hidalgo? What is wrong with her? I'm so confused.
That was a Trumponian level of tweedishness. And it was like peak white woman, right?
Yes.
It was like, I've made a complaint and things, and actually it was my own understanding, but instead of acknowledging my misunderstanding of the situation, I'm going to act like I actually did something and saw something, even though things are proceeding as they were before my misunderstanding confused everybody. It also underscored, because she had anti-racist organizations or organizations that claim to be anti-racist also backing her, and that Black-only spaces were a problem. And that also shows that a lot of anti-racist organizations in Europe specifically really steadfastly believe in the racist notion of colorblindness. They really steadfastly believe in this notion that there should absolutely be no separation of the races, even if marginalized people want to have a minute to not deal with microaggressions and to converse amongst themselves. That is the same as, like, you know, separate water fountains and unequal accommodations and the fact that we can't get apartments and jobs if we have Black sounding names. So it's they equate those two things.
Well, I mean, it's just like the people who equate the NAACP, which works diligently to uplift and empower Black people, to praise those who are doing a great job, to support those who are in trouble, with the KKK,
yeah,
which is a hate organization that goes around demeaning, humiliating, and killing people.
Right, right. And the thing is that the way that whiteness is set up is that if you say, I want to center Blackness in any way, shape, or form, people see that as a threat to whiteness. Because the way that everything is set up, you should never want to center that. Even in anti-racist work that I've seen happen in Europe, oftentimes white people's feelings are centered. And that's how they like it.
Well, you know, we have the equivalent of African-American studies and African diaspora studies in certain European countries. They've put together whole departments that don't include one Black or brown professor. So how do you want to talk about these things and you don't have the people involved who are affected? I don't understand, though, why it's considered an issue to exclude whites when Blacks are institutionally and systemically excluded on a regular basis. And this is the question, because a lot of people are equating this type of exclusion to just repeating oppressive structures. And again, I go back to the example of the NAACP, or here in the UK, we have the Black British Awards. These things exist because of the exclusion that takes place in the mainstream. They are brought into existence in order to create space for people who are otherwise underserved and underrepresented. So why does that then become a threat?
It becomes a threat because white people want to make it invisible, the amount of work that we do to coexist with them. They want it to be that the fact that we coexist with them is a benefit to us. And it's not always unfortunately. That's what bears out statistically. What happens is that when we're in white spaces, we deal with microaggressions, we get our hair touched, we get asked where we're really from, we get underestimated, our credentials are come into question. There are people that just don't have any level of context for us. And so we have to do all level of kind of code switching and acrobatics just to placate and survive in those spaces. And when we say, you know what, we would like an afternoon workshop session of 2-3 hours to opt out of that in a formalized environment, that becomes a problem.
Well, I would like to, because you mentioned it, I would like to mention Black Lives Matter co-founder Alicia Garza, who was thrilled to graduate with her master's in ethnic studies from San Francisco State University this year. She wrote in a Facebook post, you know, it took her 8 years to complete. It was a struggle, but she got there with the support of great people, especially great women at her side. And she dedicated a speech that she held at the graduation ceremony to Black women and Black women alone. And I want to quote just one part of that. She said, quote, "Were it not for Black women, there would be no Underground Railroad. No one to campaign against Black bodies swinging from trees like strange fruit. There would be no protest songs like the ones that came from the toes, through the womb, up through the lungs, and out of the brilliant mind and mouth of Nina Simone. There would be no Black women voting like the 96% of us who did vote and said hell no to this administration. There would be no America if there were not Black women." End quote. In our final segment, what are we excited about? What are we looking forward to? Let me hear it.
What are we excited about? What are we looking forward to? Oh, this is always a struggle for me. So you go first.
Oh my gosh. Like, we've been doing this for a minute.
I know. It's always a struggle.
So Ducky, which is kind of a cabaret show that is dedicated to queer people, is hosting what they call a Ducky Family Performance and Clubbing tomorrow on Saturday. It is specifically, Ducky Family specifically is dedicated to cutie pop folk. And so in this iteration, cutie pop performers will take center stage and they're going to be doing performance, carnival, clubbing, and all the good things. I'm looking forward to that. A friend of a friend is going to be hosting it. We got JJ Revlon, who I've talked about recently, who is like super dope in the voguing scene, who will be performing. Sadie Center, who is amazing. She has started her own Black and Brown cabaret night that happens on a monthly basis called the Cocoa Butter Club. And there's a lot of, you know, it's just a lot of people coming out. Carnage, who we've had here on the show, will be performing as well. So yeah, best believe I'm going to be in the building. It's going to be great. I'm excited about that. Now you've had some time.
Well, you know, we get down in Vienna too, also. So, yeah, I mean, this is Pride Month for us. We have something known as a Regenbogen Festival.
A Rainbow Festival. Okay.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do also, which translates into the Rainbow Parade. And that's our Pride Parade. So that's coming up. And, you know, Pink is having their Women's Pride Night. So I'm looking forward to it. Pink is a party run by a woman of color that I've been supporting ever since. And, you know, I had a little run-in with them because they always ask me if I know it's a queer party every time, every single time at the door.
Because femmes ain't queer.
Because femmes are not queer. So I've had an intervention about that. And so hopefully they will either do that to everybody, make a big sign, or don't do it to me. Right? Because, like, you know, I have tried to butch up in the past and it's impossible. Mm. You've seen this happen, right? It's sad. It's sad.
Yeah.
It's Vienna Festwochen. And so that means that more things are happening. It's a performance art festival, and it's a very queer performance art and a very political performance art festival. There's a series coming up about migrant politics. Hamomness is continuing with with a Brazilian woman who is kind of facilitating the hammam. So it's absolutely amazing. There's so many things. If you haven't checked it out, just Google Vina Festivalen and check out all of it. So yeah, that's what I'm looking forward to. All the things that are happening in Vienna, state funded no less, that are queer, that are POC led. I love it.
Well, that's all for this week. If you'd like to keep up with us, you can follow us on Twitter at The Queer Truth. We'd love to hear your thoughts on some of the things we've discussed today, so feel free to get at us. And if you can, drop by our Patreon site, patreon.com/TheQueerTruth, and give us a small donation. Until next time, peace out.
Peace.